G'day folks, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. My name's Oliver Brandt, and with me this week are Angelo Valdivia.
Hey, Paisanos.
Michael Goncalves.
Hey, team.
And Luke Henderson.
Howdy, howdy.
We've got a great episode lined up for you this week, all about new Joy-Con colours, a beloved game developer shutting down, and Nintendo killing a very helpful Zelda glitch, and more. But first, let's talk about a surprising sequel, to say the least. So, yeah, we kind of knew about Everybody Want to Switch before this announcement, because journalist Imran Khan, who used to work for the
Game Informer,
and then Fanbyte, and now has moved into game development, Nintendo focus grouped the game, 2021, and it was so poorly received by every focus group that they did, that they shelved it. So it's a little bit surprising to see that it is back, and you know that they're actually going to release it. So it's a budget release. It's only $50, which obviously is cheaper than the full price that you pay for 1-2 Switch still. And, like, I don't understand why this exists. Like, nobody really liked 1-2 Switch. Like, it was fine. But, like, nobody wanted to pay $80 for that. And now, like, they've just said, oh, yeah, it's coming out, like, you know, June 30. It's $50. There's no trailer. There's no screenshots. We don't even really know what it's about.
There's one screenshot on the Nintendo of America page. It's just a picture of two people holding controllers in very weird poses on, like, a pastel wallpaper. It doesn't actually tell you anything about the game.
No, so here's the description that they have on the eShop. It's a get together in groups and compete in a host of weird and wonderful minigames featuring everything from balloons to aliens and much more. In those games, we'll use your Joy-Con controller or smart device in a fun and unique ways, earning points for your team. In time-honored fashion, the team with the most points gets to claim the glory. Like, there's nothing there. There is literally nothing there. You could be describing, like, 50 games on the Switch with that.
I love how they say, you know, balloons to aliens. It's like, not aliens to balloons, but it's like, yeah, they got two letters into the alphabet and then gave up.
Well, I mean, like, at this stage, like, I would fully believe that there are two games in Everybody 1-2 Switch, and it's one is a balloon one and one is an alien one. Because, again, we know nothing. All we know is that there's, like, a stupid guy with a horse mask, which, like, Jesus Christ, Nintendo has caught up to 2013, so that's exciting. And that's it, right? Like, it's so weird.
Clearly, one of the minigames is going to be the Harlem Shake.
I made a joke. I made a joke in our group chat about it being like, "Oh, horse mask 2019." Then after that, I literally googled like, "When did the horse mask meme start?" Maybe I'm just misremembering, and it was 2007. So,
yeah. It's I don't know. What do we think? Are we going to be dropping $50 on Everybody 1-2 Switch?
Oh, absolutely not. But it looks like I'm looking at the picture there. Like, it is interesting that they have literally half the cast of the people that are on the cover of the game. They're holding up phones, though. And as you said, like, you're going to be using personal devices to connect to the game and stuff. Apart from something like Jackbox, I can't recall off the top of my head any games that really do that on the Switch, and that's not even really a Jackbox exclusive thing. On, is it Just Dance? Oh, of course, like, using it to control your dance moves and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's another one that's, like, a very thinly veiled Jackbox ripoff, but it was kind of ass.
How does Just Dance do it? Because Jackbox, it's not connected to the console, it's connected to a website.
Yeah.
Is Just Dance the same?
Yeah, so you log into your account on your phone in the app, right? Your phone into your Ubisoft account on the console as well.
That's interesting. Just, like, then I assume Nintendo's doing the same thing then, but, you know, Nintendo doesn't have a great history of keeping up websites, so...
Well, this will be an app. I wouldn't be surprised if it just, like, directly connects to the console, because the console obviously does have, like, you know, Wi-Fi hotspot capabilities. So
it could potentially just be, like, a new tab in that Nintendo app.
I was about to say, it's probably just the Nintendo app. Yeah.
We do know one thing, though. This game won't make use of HD Rumble in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Last time I checked, my iPhone did not have HD Rumble. So if I'm playing against people that have HD Rumble and I'm on my phone, I'm at a severe disadvantage.
Your phone has haptic feedback, though, so
So this is the thing, right? Is that like most like high-end phones, so like your iPhone does have the exact same rumble motor that the Joy-Con has, so theoretically it could use HD rumble. I very much doubt it. So they're probably not going to be any like Ice Cube games like there is with a 1-2 Switch or anything like that, which makes me think it's going to be like very pared back. And
I honestly, yeah. I think I'm equating this to the Wii Play experience, where it's just like they're fun micro games, but once you've experienced them all, you know, that's it.
But, I don't know, man. Yeah. I loved Wii Play only because of the tank game.
The tank game was tank amazing.
Tank was absolutely baller. It was so good.
But my point is, like, once you've experienced them, you don't really need to play them again. And I don't think anything in this collection will do. Like, the 1-2 Switch at launch had, the appeal of it was a tech demo to showcase the Joy-Con. And then everyone got, weirded out by the cow milking game. But I don't think this will have anything remotely similar to that.
I still feel like this game and even Nintendo Labo have completely underrepresented the IR blaster that is in every right Joy-Con. I feel like this game absolutely should be utilizing in more interesting ways than sticking the damn thing in your mouth.
Now, so I think we've talked about this in the past, but like there's an IR blaster, a very, very clever use of the IR blaster when you play Resident Evil Revelations. So when you're using like motion controls to aim and shoot and stuff in Resident Evil Revelations on the Switch, if you need to reload your gun, you have to like move one Joy-Con and then like slam the bottom of your other Joy-Con as if you were like putting a clip in, and it uses the IR camera to detect that that's what you're doing, and it's like the stupidest like use of the technology, but yeah.
I just realized something. Everybody 1-2 Switch is playable in TV mode and tabletop mode. It's not playable in handheld mode, which means this would be the first game Nintendo's published since the Switch Lite released that is not compatible with that console.
I mean, like, you could play it still if you connect Joy-Con to it, right?
That's the thing, you need an additional accessory to play it. This is the first game they've published that requires an additional device to play it on one of their consoles.
Well, good thing there are new Joy-Con on the way.
Ring Fit Adventure is one.
Did that release before or after the Lite launch, though?
I think it was after the Lite, I'm pretty sure.
It was probably around the same time, like 2019, late-ish.
Yeah, I just remember it was before the pandemic hit, and that's why it exploded.
Yeah.
But...
Anyway, to follow up on Angelo's segue there, there are new Joy-Con colors. Oh, I don't think anyone cares about Everybody 1-2 Switch enough to like continue talking about it. Like it's a thing that exists.
No.
Actually, I know is Target dropped the first game like a week after it released down to like $30. You know, it's like a launch week game dropped like significantly at Target, and that's how I picked it up.
This game and the previous game should just both be free. 1-2 Switch should have came with the console, and this should just be like another freebie tech demo, whatever you want to call it. It's just dumb.
Yep. It should be a Nintendo Switch Online perk, probably. Because
I don't know if you call it a perk, but it should.
Well,
just be
in there. It should be included. But yeah, Android.
Yeah.
Go.
I said I also don't think it would have added value, quote unquote. But yeah.
I just wanted to point out some stat about the game. So I just did a quick search, which is why I was clickety-clacking on my keyboard earlier. So 1-2 Switch is apparently sold, according to Wikipedia, 1-2 Switch has sold just over 3.63 million copies.
Oh my God.
You know, sounds like a lot, but I don't know. It's all relative, right? It's currently, again, according to Wikipedia, it is currently the 33rd best-selling game on the Switch. It sits right underneath Fire Emblem Three Houses, which is on 3.82 million. And it's a few slots above Paper Mario, The Origami King, Yoshi's Crafted World, and Metroid Dread. So it has sold better than those games. Granted,
that's a crime.
It was also a launch game, so there is that too.
How does a game that sold 3 million get a sequel, but a game that sold 52 million not get a sequel?
Well, again, as Ollie pointed out before, like, and I think I've mentioned before as well, like, Nintendo seems to be the only company in the world that makes games and then holds on to them for a year or two and doesn't release them. They just Just like, we'll put this in the back burner, we'll set it for a rainy day.
When they announced it, I went hunting and I can't find a classification for this game. The box art's been released, it's got a classification sticker on it, but I can't actually find a classification listing.
Well, so I would wager that it was probably classified through IARC, which usually has like a 1 or 2 month delay.
Yeah.
Because usually IARC is only used for digital only releases, but you can pay to have IARC rate your game. If it's getting a physical release. Otherwise it's free for digital releases.
So just another question. Yeah. So do we know of any other, I can't think of any off the top of my head, are there any other Nintendo published games on the horizon now that Tears of the Kingdom is out?
Pikmin 4.
When's that out?
August.
Yeah, July. It was like 14 somewhere. Yeah.
I almost was gonna, and Metroid Prime 4, right guys?
Metroid Prime 4. Right? I mean,
yeah. I was also gonna like kind of argue as a joke that everybody won 2 Switch could be the Switch's swan song for the rest of the year.
I don't think we even mentioned about the fact that this game was announced on the 1st of the month and it's releasing at the end of the month. Like, Nintendo have never done that. I don't think any company's ever done that.
The game was probably done in 2017, that's why.
Oh, it totally was. It's probably just all the stuff they decided they didn't want to put in the first game, but...
The only other thing I can think of is Metroid Prime Remastered, which was announced and then released on the same day.
I can guarantee you, this game's obviously going to be awful, but I guarantee you, like, in years to come, this is going to be that rare gem that collectors are going to find really hard to get a physical copy of.
But everyone's, like, in 10 years' time, they're going to be like, oh, this is terrible for video game preservation. I can't find this game.
I can see it being the Omegathon final game.
Yep.
Anyway, new Joy-Cons. Later this month, there's going to be 4 new Joy-Con colors, but only 2 new sets, unfortunately. So this is coming out on the same day as everybody want to switch. So, you know, while you're at EB, you can pick them up at the same time. They're all pastel color. So there's a pastel pink and a pastel yellow combo, and a pastel purple and a pastel green combo. The purple is gorgeous, and I need it. The others, like, I could take or leave. Why are they making, like, new Joy-Con colors when, like, Joy-Con drift is still a thing, and they have made, like, zero strides to fix that? I mean, like, the newer ones are, like, definitely way more resistant to drift than, like, the earlier ones. But it's still not, like, a solved problem, you know? And, like, second of all, like, why can't I just...
It's a solved problem. They just don't want to solve it.
You have to
buy new Joy-Cons.
That's the solution.
Well, I mean, like, they will replace in every region now your drifting Joy-Cons for free. So, you know, there's that. But that also means you have to send away your Joy-Cons, like, every year to get them replaced. Anyway, my second issue is that, like, I just want to be able to buy, like, a set of purple Joy-Cons, right? Like, why do I have to buy, like, a purple and green one, right? It's just, I hate how they do this. And, like, with previous ones, I've been like, oh, in other regions, they have the opposite ones. So you have to, like, fucking import things.
Yep.
Like, that's the Pokemon business strategy.
Well, except it's not, because they're not even, like, selling it to me. I have to, like, go to, like, some shady, like... you know, third-party import company to... Oh,
sorry, it's the Pokemon Go business strategy. We have to go to another country to catch a Snorlax or whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, like, these look nice. I don't really see the point of more Joy-Cons. I think everyone has enough Joy-Cons now. Don't need more Joy-Cons. And, like, I don't even use them. You know, as I tweeted, like, shortly after this, like, I use the Split Pad Pro Compact. And it's just, like... I would never, ever use any other, like, controllers handheld, and, like, I have, like, a shit ton of pro controllers just, like, sitting on my desk in front of me right now. So, like, for docked play, I don't need Joy-Cons either, so it's like, why would I buy more?
I really hope in the next Switch Pro, Super Switch, whatever the hell it's going to be called, that controller changes and upgrades is one of the big things that happens to that console. Because I feel like the ergonomics of the Switch console are not great at all. See, like, for me anyway, it's like, I feel like holding a console is not enjoyable after, like, a long period of time.
Yeah, so like I find the like Switch Lite like significantly more comfortable to hold for longer periods than the regular Switch, and I'm sure that part of that is just because it's like lighter and smaller and just like fits in the hand better. But like I'm also not sure like if you're gonna keep that screen size and like the body size of like the Switch, like how can you like create controllers that like feel nicer to hold in long periods but not make them bulkier, because like I'm pretty sure Nintendo doesn't want like a much bulkier console. Like the split pads like on my Switch like make it so much bulkier, like Steam Deck sized.
Yeah, but I think the issue is that nobody's going, at least I don't think anyone's going, like I will stand by this, no one's going, oh, this is super uncomfortable, but I'm really glad it's this size. If it was any bigger, I'd really, really hate it. I think if it was just bigger and more ergonomic, everyone would be like, yeah, that's totally fine. Like, no one would care.
I don't know. I think it would be annoying for me because, like, as it is, it's kind of annoying for me. But, yeah, I don't know. It's not like a big deal breaker or anything.
In years past, Nintendo have proven they're okay with doing multiple SKUs at launch. You know, we had the white Wii U and the black Wii U, or the non-pro and the pro version. We had the grey Joy-Cons and the red and blue Joy-Cons at the Switch launch. I honestly think it would be fine if they launched, you know, if the Switch 2 had the Joy-Con format still. It comes with the standard Joy-Cons in one model and then maybe a Joy-Con chunky pro version. Yeah. Just like, you know, they know if they charge an extra $20 for the fatter Joy-Cons or whatever you want to call them, people will pay for it if they want them.
I very strongly suspect that the next Switch iteration won't have detachable Joy-Cons at all. I think it's just going to be like a handheld that you dock and then you have to buy a Pro Controller for it.
As long as my 8-bit Ultimate Controller works on it, I don't care, I'm fine.
Also, like, what's up with that, right? Because, like, they said that they were going to launch, and then, like, they still haven't, like, showed up. I've been wanting to get this 8-bit, like, Ultimate Controller for such a long time, and it's been, like, almost, like, a year since they announced it, and it's still not available.
I know.
They're busy working on the 64 controller inserts, so...
Because I did the review for Vooks, and that went live, like, the first week of November, and they're like, it's launching here soon, and it still hasn't launched. But, yeah, it's not really news that we put in there, but yeah, 8BitDo doing Hall Effect sensor mods for N64 controllers and wireless upgrade to them.
So yeah, and they seem a little bit dodgy.
They don't seem great.
But it's nice that they're trying.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I think because, like, you know, they can be updated with their firmware and stuff, they could very much, you know, be improved in the future. And, like, I think some other 8BitDo products have had, like, teething issues with, like, the first batches. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case here, too.
But there's also that company that made the Hall Effect sensors for the Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
So maybe Nintendo will surprise us and put those in their next Joy-Con, their next Switch controller.
I don't think Nintendo's going to pay somebody else for a design. I don't think they're going to license shit. Like, it took them, like, 4 years to, like, add Bluetooth audio because they didn't want to pay for the license. So I don't think they're gonna like pay a random like tiny controller company to like license their tech. It's just not gonna happen. And that company unfortunately does have the patent on it, so
yeah.
You know, anybody who wants to use Hall Effect sensors in modern controllers has to pay them. But yeah, I mean, anyway. Controllers. Purple. I'm a fan. Just honestly, give me a console in that color, and I'll like add my split pads to it, and it'll be fine. I don't really give too much of a shit about
this is a tangent. Nintendo is the odd console maker this generation. They keep putting out special consoles all the time. But can we just acknowledge that Xbox and PlayStation have been controllers? In this generation, there's so many color variants and options now.
Xbox particularly have been like on point with their controllers. They're really nice.
Yeah,
and that's not counting Design Lab.
Yeah, I mean that's totally. My only issue with Xbox controllers, this is also just like the controller hour now. My only issue with Xbox controllers is that like the Elite Series ones, which like I think are really cool, and I love a back button on my controllers, they don't have the share button, which is like one of the most crucial buttons.
I've talked about this so much. Agreed.
It's just like, it's so infuriating because like you put the button there, and then it's like, oh, there's this button to like switch profiles. It's like, okay, can I just remap the button to be 100% screenshots instead?
I don't think we haven't had this convo with each other. I've said this exact same thing so many times. Like, why can't you just remap the profile button to the screenshot button? Like, why not?
It's so infuriating because, like, it's a modern console and, like, a screenshot button is, like, kind of crucial, right? You know, it's free marketing for your console to let people, like, quickly take screenshots and videos and, like, you know, upload them to Twitter or whatever. Why are you making it so difficult for people with a premium product? Like, this is more expensive than a regular controller. It'd be like if the DualSense Edge came out and they're like, oh yeah, there's no touchpad on this. And it's like, well, that's kind of like necessary for some games, hey. But yeah, it's the dumbest thing. But then like, you know, PlayStation is off here making Project Q, which is a thing that nobody cares about or wants, so.
Oh yes, their QU pad.
Yeah, it's just the dumbest thing.
I just love how that was announced the day after the PlayStation branded Backbone controller launched in Australia. Yeah.
It was so funny because like you'd like go onto like the PlayStation blog and it would be like, you know, oh, announcing Project Q, and then like the next post it would be like, oh, get the Android Backbone Xbox controller now, and it's like, oh, this is kind of a bad look for you guys. Anyway, Angelo, tell us about controllers. You've been quiet for a while.
Oh, like there's nothing to it. It's fine that they exist, I guess, but like I'm not going to rush out and buy them. I'm still using
controllers. It's fine that they exist, Angela.
it's fine that they exist. Yeah, but new ones exist is what I mean.
Put that on the box art, Jesus.
I'm still rocking my Splatoon like neon pink and neon green ones. I love those. Whatever. And when Joy-Con break, you know, when anything that's electronic breaks, I hate having to go out and buy a new one of that thing because I've already invested in it. So I always just buy replacement parts and tinker away and replace things. Like my Joy-Con have drifted multiple times now and I just get replacement sticks. They feel like crap, but I'd rather spend $10 on those than another $70, $80, $100 on a new pair.
See, I would, but like the process of opening up a Joy-Con is so fiddly and annoying that I just...
It's an absolute ball ache, that's for sure. But like,
literally, last time I did it, I like tore one of the ribbon cables, and I was just like, "Fucking whatever, I'll just toss this out." Like, I don't care anymore. I just do not care.
With my DualSense controller, in like the R2 trigger, one of the little springs had snapped. The ones that like bring the trigger back about a year ago. So I bought a replacement spring and opened that up, and that was also just a head spin to actually open up and get working. But then when I went to go close it, I noticed that I had actually torn off one of the ribbons for one of the microphone arrays. There's one at the front and there's one at the back. And I tore off one of the ribbons, so then the microphone... I had to buy a replacement of all those. And like, again, like it's only like $4 or $5 just to buy the replacement ribbon. So just controllers are getting more complicated to open up. So they are more annoying, but for cheapskates like me, like I'd rather go through that pain rather than have to keep forking out money, like big amounts of money on replacing tech that companies should already have R&D'd and made sure that they work properly with to last the generation.
Well, I mean, like, see, here's the thing, right? Is that, like, we can say, like, oh, Nintendo didn't do enough R&D, they didn't do enough research, but, like, there's, I don't know, like, I'm willing to give, like, the teensiest bit of leeway because, like, Nintendo testing it in-house, that's, like, at most, like, 1,000 people able to test that, like, compared to 120 million people testing it and abusing it in different ways. Like, they can't test for every possibility. So, like, I totally understand. But, like, they also haven't done anything to address it since.
No,
so, like,
if
a product comes out and it's, like, you know, it doesn't have the longevity that anyone expected, then, like, you know...
Look, if analog sticks were first generation, this generation, they never existed before, then sure, I'd forgive them. But they've been doing... Other game companies have been doing analog sticks for decades now. They've had clickable... sticks in their controllers since the Wii U. Like, they've had the tech, they've had the research, they know how all this works.
And
the
Nintendo 64 analog sticks have more longevity than Switch Joy-Con sticks.
Yeah, exactly.
And those things are wild.
So, like, yeah, I'm never going to be forgiving of multi-billion dollar corporations for making sure that their stuff works. So,
yeah, but I mean, like, it's worth noting that, like, every, like, unless it's a Hall Effect stick, so like the Dreamcast and nothing else, like every stick on every controller will drift eventually. Like it's just an inevitability. If you like search up like DualShock 4 controller drift, like it's a thing. You can look up Xbox 360, you can look up PS1.
These like, were happening super quick, and they were happening to almost everyone.
Okay, but like the same is like true of like Xbox controllers. It's just like we didn't have the sort of forum culture and the internet culture to sort of back that up, right? Like I had controller drift in my Xbox 360 controller like 4 months after I got my Xbox 360. And I know other people who were the same. It's just like we didn't have the same sort of like fast-paced internet culture that made these things into major news stories.
That was Twitch then, was... but this is now, and they still haven't.
Yeah, fixed the problem. I know. But like, you know, I don't know.
You got to remember ball mice back from the the 90s and early aughts had, you know, the whole hard ball in there. You know, you'd have to take that ball out and then scrape all the dirt and stuff off the rollers.
Oh yeah.
So it's not as if dirt inside stuff's been an issue that's only happened in the last 15, 20 years. It's been happening for 30, 40 years now.
Can we talk about how grubby mice get? My goodness. They're so gross.
Yeah, oh my God. I cleaned mine out the other day and it was just like, I genuinely like hated myself because I was like, oh, this is revolting. But then I was like, you know, everybody like it happens to everybody. Like it is just a fact of life.
Yeah.
Ball bearing mice were the worst for that. Absolutely.
and the seams in all your controllers.
Oh, you don't even start on that, man. It's so gross. I look at that and I'm just disgusted with myself.
Anyway, that was our controller discussion.
Big tangent.
Come back next fortnight for more discussion on controllers.
We all had an input on that discussion.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it.
So
input.
Moving into some, you know, less joyous news, I guess, depending on how you interpreted the last news story. So the developer behind the Dylan's Rolling Western games, as well as he co-developed Kirby's Return to Dreamland Deluxe, they're called Vanpool, and unfortunately they've announced that they will be shutting down. So they didn't really give a reason for it. They just said, you know, due to multiple factors, we're shutting down. They also developed a bunch of Tingle games on the Nintendo DS, which, sure. But, you know, that's them, right? They've worked as a co-development studio with Nintendo for quite some time now. Sort of like the past, like, 6 or 7 years. They've been co-developing a whole bunch of stuff. And they've done work on games like, you know, Splatoon and all of the Kirby games and, just a whole bunch of stuff. So unfortunately, they are shutting down. And hopefully,
not shutting down, they're gone. They're shutting down, and then like halfway through the next day, they were all gone.
Yeah. So hopefully, some of the developers there will find their way to Nintendo and other places as well.
Given the number of them that have worked on Kirby games over the years, it would not surprise me if they get picked up by HAL.
Yeah. Always sad when a video game developer shuts down. And this is like almost exactly the same as like Alpha Dream.
I was just thinking that too.
A few years ago. Because like Alpha Dream, Vanpool made a 3DS game after the Switch came out. And it just did not do well, unsurprisingly, because nobody really cared about the 3DS after the Switch came out. It is a... It's definitely not a good thing that they're out of it.
I would say sent out for if anyone needs any joy in their life, I would highly recommend to look up the box art for freshly picked Tingle's Rupee Land, because it is glorious.
I actually haven't seen. Oh yeah, it is a it is wonderful. Big fan. Also, give us more Tingle games. We haven't had Tingle in a game for a really long time now. I don't care if he's like
a Tingle is legally allowed to be out, to be honest.
Make him the face of Pride Month.
Yeah, for sure. Nintendo should do something for Pride Month, and you know, Tingle, why not? Rip to Vanpool. I hope they get to continue doing the cool stuff that they wanted to do, but under other developers. Not really a lot of room for discussion on that, but yeah. So we'll move on. There was a new patch released for Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. It killed all known item duplication glitches, which is like really annoying. So I haven't updated my game because item dupes are fun and I don't want to grind for money. And I also want all the cool outfits. So, you know, get bent, Nintendo. I'm not updating.
I've done the exact same thing for the exact same reason.
Get bent, Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it always frustrates me when things like this get, like, sort of patched out from games, because it's like, who is this hurting, right? It's a single-player game, it doesn't hurt the experience. You can't, like, overload the memory because it, like, unloads some of the items when you get to too many anyway. Like, there is no harm.
I was going to bring this up, because I've heard a ton of people say, oh, but it breaks the game economy. I'm like, what are you talking about? What game economy? It's not an MMO where like you can genuinely destroy an economy. It's a single-player game. You can do whatever you want on it. It's totally fine.
So in Skyrim, you can go up to a vendor, sell whatever you've got in your inventory, and take his 450 coins that he's got. You can take him down to nothing. Right? If you go back the next day, he's got no coins still. Right? It takes a few days for that to for him to get money back. In Tears of the Kingdom, you can go to Beedle, sell 10,000 rupees worth of diamonds, right? Then go farm another stack of diamonds, go straight back to him like 40 minutes later, and he still will take, the 10,000 rupees worth of diamonds. There's nothing in that. There's no restrictions in the economy in this game, so I don't understand that argument.
Here's the thing, right? Is that like, you could be like, oh, it's breaking the economy, but it's like, I can just go out and like endlessly mine diamonds, right? It's like, if I wanted to, I could spend like the next 100 hours getting a full 999 stack of diamonds and then just sell it and have the infinite money anyway. So it's like, how is this any different? It's just cutting down on the time.
Because by then, you will have been a self-made millionaire. You will have earned that money, Ollie. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as a real billionaire, though. So.
Pull yourself up by the bootstraps, Ollie.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just like, this is kind of like one of Nintendo's like things, right? Where it's like, we decide how you play the game and like no fun allowed. They do it in pretty much all of their games, right? Where people like find like a fun little glitch that is ultimately harmless. Like I understand, like if you find a glitch in like Splatoon or whatever that has like a thriving competitive scene, maybe patch that out. But like in a single player game with like no ill effects, there's no risk to like your save file or whatever. Why kill that stuff? Like it just, I don't know. Other companies do it too. Like this is by no means also a Nintendo thing.
I love how they phrase it in the patch notes as well. Like, several issues have been addressed to improve the gameplay experience.
Yeah.
Improve who?
That's generic Nintendo talk, unfortunately. That's what they say like for every patch release. Like, if this was included, if there was like a major issue or something or a bunch of issues they had to fix and they just threw this in because they were fixing other things and they thought, why not? Sure, like, I get that. But to release an update that exclusively kills
the thing, right? So, like, it also did, like, fix one quest that couldn't be progressed otherwise. But, like, there was already an in-game fix for that anywhere where you could just wait for a Blood Moon, so it's like, was that really needed?
I learned the other day, if you cook in the last 30 minutes of the day before a Blood Moon, every meal you make has double the effect.
Yeah.
And apparently it happens in Breath of the Wild. I did not know that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know more about this audio issue. Fixed an issue where the sound would play at an extremely high volume in certain conditions.
So this is a really fun glitch. I don't know exactly what causes it. But it's basically like a particular type of enemy in one of the temples will just like always be playing as if it was like right next to you, no matter where you are in the temple. It's a very fun glitch because like it's the, for Luke, because I know you've played this, it's the fire temple.
Oh, yeah, I know the glitch. I've had that.
Yeah, yeah. That is fixed now. But, I mean, like, not for me, because I haven't updated.
I'm just picturing, like, some 8-year-old kid in their car playing, and then it's, like, they're just bleeding from their ears, like, ah! It's so great.
But, yeah. I don't know.
I hate children.
These things is...
Whoa. That is going so fast.
No, they're fine. I was one once. It's all good.
Once
we went from get bent Nintendo to I hate children.
I just want We should actually make this a discussion topic for an entire episode, just talking about like the best glitches in games. Because like, yeah, I was like,
we should make hating children an entire discussion topic.
That's just its own podcast. But like, no, like, I kind of missed the days when Nintendo games would come out and they just couldn't patch things. Like, I think like some of my fondest memories are back to long car rides playing Pokemon Red, just sitting there like for, you know, dozens of hours at a time.
Swimming up
like,
and down the coast trying to get the rare candy glitch.
Doing that. Like saving turning your game off partway through saving so that way you can duplicate your Pokemon. Like, you know, you're always rolling the dice on that one because you can literally corrupt your fucking save file. But we all did it. Nonetheless.
Yeah, the best one, the best ever glitch, just quickly, is the, for me, it's not a glitch, but it's the Wario Stadium on N64. If you can make that jump just after the start line.
It's a pretty good one. Like, even recently, with Animal Crossing, like, dude, you better believe that I exploited the hell out of that, like, Infinite Bells glitch that was in there. Like, I was just there racking up millions and millions. I'd paid off Tom Nook. I'd gotten all sorts of expensive junk. Like, and that was just at the point
game
where I'm like,
economy.
I know, right? But then I was at the point where I'm like, I've got so much money. I'm going to go to my friends' islands and I'm going to bury money in their islands. Like,
that's cute.
Yeah, like, because why not? Like, it's my own game. Like, I'm doing whatever the hell. If I choose to buy the game and then burn it, that's on me. Like, it's up to me. I paid for it, so why not just let me just enjoy a couple of glitches.
As long as you don't save scum and piss up. Oh my god.
Hey, you
finish try that again, Michael?
Nope. No, I'm just down, mate. I'm over it. I just can't talk. I'm not talking anymore.
But I don't know. Like, there's like in Breath of the Wild, I did the glitch that lets you like dupe the spirit orbs so you can like actually get to maximum hearts and stamina rather than just like picking one or the other. You know, in most games where there's like an easy to do glitch that doesn't like, you know, ruin my hands just through the execution of like 17 frame perfect inputs, I'm gonna do them like just for the fun of it, right? Like, I don't. Yeah.
It's, I don't know. So glitches are the entire reason why GTA, it's great fun to pull out the phone, punch in a random number and spawn a tank. Like, just doing things silly is exactly why we play video games. And if people are going to take that stuff away, it sort of defeats the entire purpose of, you know, having fun.
Imagine you couldn't be able to watch a guy play Super Mario World, do an exact set of movements to manipulate RAM to finish the game within, like, what is it, like a minute 30 or whatever it is. That is so it is so impressive to watch. Mm. If they patched that out, that would have been awful.
I guess the takeaway lesson is in a big single player open game like this, just don't update your game. Just leave it.
Yeah. I mean that's what I've chosen to do here, because, you know, like, I wanna dupe stuff.
Unless like your game just gets so loud that, like, you know, your ears start bleeding and your eyes fall out, then you know, maybe update it, but
But yeah, Nintendo, give it back to us. Give us the dupe glitch. Make it intentional.
Can you just... You could totally just uninstall the game, right? And then just reinstall the game and it won't have
If you have the cartridge.
If you have the cartridge, yeah.
But like typically, like there's this thing that Nintendo does where like if your game has been updated, it sometimes won't let you on that console play the game unless it's updated all the way to the full thing. So like if you update it to like 1.1.2, like you didn't stop that update, even if you haven't like opened up the game or like, you know, created the new save file or whatever.
I know there's often like incompatibility issues with save files as well.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah. Like save files might be locked to a certain version.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. So moving into our feature discussion, it's going to be a short feature discussion, but I just wanted to quickly talk about video game difficulty. So while there haven't been any, well, there aren't really any sort of Souls games to talk about, I feel like we can safely talk about difficulty without drawing the ire of like millions of people. Difficulty in video games is like a big discussion, for better or for worse. You know, there's arguments to be made that difficulty and accessibility are very closely intertwined, but just for the purposes of this conversation, we'll leave accessibility out of it and just talk about difficulty that we personally engage with. So if you're playing a game, I want to know from everybody sort of what are your thoughts on difficulty? What difficulty do you tend to play on? And do you think that you know, more games should have easier or harder difficulty settings? Whoever wants to go.
I'll go first. I have a weird relationship with game difficulties because... Why are you smiling already, Michael? It's not that smile about.
Jeez.
Sorry. I probably started off a bit weird. But like, so I have a very distinct memory of when I flipped on the difficulties that I was set for myself. Going before I got in 360, I would always play games in easy mode. Because I felt there was no reason to play any harder, right? I was just playing because I liked the story, just for the fun of it. And then, if I like games enough, I'd go back and play them again, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd always just play them in easy because I never found a real compelling reason to play them any harder. But then achievements came into it. And that's when everything changed. Achievements and trophies. And I became the biggest whore for them for a little while. And when you look at my achievement numbers, you absolutely question why I even bothered. Like, there's no point of... And why I even bothered being an achievement whore. But I'm quite proud of my trophy count, at least, considering the amount of games that I played. And at that point, I started playing things on like hard and then harder difficulties and things. And every time I would get a new game, and even now, first thing I do whenever it comes up and it says, what difficulty do you want to play at? I always just check to see if there is a trophy and if it's a gold or a high number of achievement points for playing on like hard or the hardest difficulty. But if there isn't, then like I'll just by default now I'll just bump it down to normal or medium. Like that's usually where I sort of coast. I coast at like normal and medium, unless there's a specific reward for playing any harder than that. Because otherwise, like I used to also kind of enjoy playing hard just for the bragging rights of saying, you know, I play it on hard mode. But then like no one kind of cared, so I stopped caring as well. But yeah, like I don't feel any reason to make a game harder, to have to spend more time just getting more and more angry with it, frustrated, not wanting to play it. So I just might as well just play it at a more suitable level that lets me kind of get through it, not easily, but you know, at least at a rate that the developer intended, I feel. So yeah.
Yeah. I think it's pretty much been like this my entire life. I enjoy playing games at whatever the normal level of difficulty is, like whatever like the developer intended, whatever you want to call that. That's what I just enjoy doing. I have no problem with other difficulties existing. I know some people do for some reason. Like I don't really understand why, but if people want to play a game in an easier difficulty, down to the point where like it's basically like just a story mode, I'm 100% okay with that. And you know, to the other extreme as well, if people want to make your eyes bleed like in real life by playing a game, live the dream. That's totally fine if that's what you want to do. Then we have the subject of games that have one difficulty only, like you said, like these Souls likes, which I think I'm probably okay with, because I feel like that is so tied to the gameplay experience. The gameplay is very much tied to the difficulty of the game. Well, we'll get into it, but like I do agree that concessions is, I don't know if that's the right word, should be made to help games like that be more accessible though.
For sure. Luke,
I grew up playing games in the era where there was no difficulty settings. You just got the game and you either liked it or you didn't. And I remember playing through Shadow Warrior on the Game Boy, and that game would kick my butt continuously. Like, it was not an easy game. And a lot of that was because of the limitations of the platform. But I just still kept trying because I was like, I'm going to get through this. The New Zealand Story on the NES, that game is brutal at times.
And such a good game.
I'm hanging for the Taito Collection 2 coming out soon. That'll have it in there. But I love that game, but it's just so brutal at times. And I still, you know, have fond memories of playing it. That being said, these days, depending on what I'm playing, if I'm playing, because I play a lot of games for review, if I'm given a game with like a 4-day time before the reviews embargo's up, and it's like a 15-20 hour epic. If they've included a story mode, I'll just throw it on story mode, right? Like I played through Horizon Forbidden West just before Tears of the Kingdom came out. I played that in story mode, and it still took me like 19 hours to get through it, through the story. And the whole reason I did that is because I just needed to get through the story. I didn't care about, you know, the 17 extra side missions or anything like that. I just wanted the story. And games where the difficulty isn't difficult because it's now requires more of you, they just increase the amount of health enemies get. That's not difficulty, that's just bullet sponginess, and I don't like that in games. I think that just it's the laziest way of doing game difficulty. And I think that's not helping anyone. If it was something like more akin to like, you know, if you went higher up in difficulty, became more like a Dark Souls experience, then sure. But just adding, you know, 200% to their health bar doesn't make a game more difficult. It just makes it pure frustration because it's not making you, it's not giving you anything back extra for the effort you're putting in. So my thing has always been, I'll stick with just the base difficulty level at the gate. If a game does let you swap, you know, I did it in Jedi Survivor. I got up to a point, and after like 2 hours of trying to get through this one area, I just kept getting owned. I dropped the difficulty back one level, got through it, put it back up again, and I was fine.
Totally.
So if games do that, I'm fine with it. But my honest thing is, again, like I grew up without difficulty settings, so whatever the default is that the game says, you know, that's just what I'll go with.
That's fair. Yeah, as I said, like things are a little bit more complicated for people who have to review games. So if I'm playing a game for review, 9 times out of 10, I will pick the easiest difficulty. And I know that, like, you know, there's going to be people that are like, oh, games journalists bad at games. Which, yeah, I'm absolutely bad at games. But that's not why I put it on the difficulty. The
imagine
lowest
people
difficulty.
Saying about movie reviewers that they're bad at watching movies.
Yeah, exactly, right? yeah, so like the reason I put it on is because, like, you know, as Luke said, often time will be on very, very tight deadlines, and, you know, every little bit that can get you through a game quicker helps. And I would rather, you know, not get, you know, quote unquote, the full experience than, like, play a game and only get halfway through in time for review. So that's generally how it is. Like Luke, you know, I will usually pick the standard, you know, default difficulty if it has an option to change the difficulty in, like, after you've started the game. There's a bunch of games that don't let you do that. And in those games, I will pick the easiest difficulty every single time because I'm not restarting a game in case it just, like, becomes bullshit with its difficulty, like, halfway through. Just not going to do it. So I'll pick the easiest one because, you know...
I just when I played God of War, not the recent one, the one before that, the reboot, I played that through on normal. So I got to that stupid elevator where they just keep spawning enemies in for, like, you know, forever. And I just kept getting decimated. So I dropped it back one level in difficulty and managed to get through it. And at
I
that
love
point,
that
I was
sequence.
Like,
it was so good.
But at that point, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to play through the rest of this because the game just was pure frustration at that point. Because it wasn't combat before then wasn't demanding. It wasn't like Street Fighter level of input requirements. But you weren't having enemy after enemy after enemy thrown at you. But then all of a sudden you are. And the game, I just didn't feel like the game prepared me for that sequence. So I just sort of gave up on the difficulty. And that's what I've done with other games too, is where all of a sudden games expect you to be a master at something, but they've never given you any reason to think about that before. So,
yeah. I'm also probably the most hardline in my stance that every game should have an easy difficulty. I don't really see any reason not to do it, right? And people are like, oh, well, developers shouldn't have to change their games. And it's like, well, I don't want them to change their games. I want them to design from the get-go to have multiple difficulty settings. And even in something like Dark Souls, you know, this is probably going to stray into accessibility a little bit, but even like if somebody is not like physically or you know, mentally disabled, right? The approachability of something is just as important as the accessibility. And like there will be people who do not have the physical skill to finish a Dark Souls game or finish Elden Ring or, you know, those kinds of things. And it has like nothing to do with, you know, the limits of their body. It's just like, you know, they would have to spend hundreds and hundreds of hours to get to a point where in that particular game they can pass that, and then, like, you know, who knows if that knowledge or experience is really going to be transferable to any other game or any other thing in their life. So I think, you know, when we see things like Celeste, which is, like, obviously designed to be a difficult platformer, but has all of those options, not just for accessibility, but for approachability, where it makes clear that, like, it's not the intended experience to turn these options on, but, you know, if you feel like you would enjoy the game more, you can turn these on. I think that's the right approach to do, because, like, you know, just having, like, you know, basic, like, easy, hard, normal difficulty settings is, like, fine, but, like, having, like, fine-tuned, like, okay, well, the timing of this particular thing is just, like, difficult for me. Being able to, like, extend the timers on puzzles in some games is, you know, enough, right? That's a difficulty concession that can be made that isn't going to drastically change the nature of the game. And things like Dark Souls could benefit from that, too, because, like, you know, having more iframes when you dodge roll, or, like, enemy patterns are a little bit more, you know, subdued, or a little bit easier to read, or even just, you know, easier to dodge, or you don't take quite as much damage from things that are, you know, a little bit more intense. Like, that stuff is, like, easy to do. I don't know. I think everybody sort of benefits when more people can play games, whether that's an accessibility thing or an approachability thing.
I feel like a lot of this, annoyingly, has to do a little bit to do with gamer culture. And the perception that somehow people are less than if they require an easier difficulty or an accessibility option or whatever when they beat a game. Like, it's just, I feel like that's just really reductive and such an old school way of thinking. Like, let someone enjoy the game however they want to play it, or however they are required to play it. Some people don't have a choice. Just let them enjoy it.
I remember way back in the day when Guitar Hero and Rock Band were big, you know, everyone would start playing, you know, the games on the easiest difficulty, just to see, you know, the song, because some people just didn't care about the gameplay, just wanted to hear the music. But I remember playing them, and I was playing through on beginner, you know, just to sort of learn, you know, how I had to hold the guitar controller. And then once I started getting better at it, I jumped up a difficulty and then jumped up again. And nowadays, like with Beat Saber, I play on hard most songs. But I in their options, I've turned off the wall stuff because I hate the ones where you've got to duck down. It's like I'm standing up playing your game already. I'm not going to be crouching and standing up for the next 5-6 minutes per song. So yeah, I'm all for choice, and I think just some small concessions to make things more approachable for, you know, the individual user is exactly what the industry needs to do. And sometimes that doesn't mean just making everything, you know, stupid, but it just means adding a little bit more time to the weapon selection wheel, which is what Horizon did. You could add more time to that by default. Or Forza Horizon 5, you can slow down the game speed. And, you know, if you need the time. I don't need that. I'm blessed and I'm not vision impaired or hearing impaired or anything. But I use that feature simply to try and get a few bloody stunt jumps that I needed, because it just made it so much easier. Because sometimes when you're going, you know, 400 kilometers down a dirt road, the game physics like to throw you out, you know, off the cliff without any warning. So, yeah, concessions make it better for everyone.
To those people that are like, you know, Dark Souls shouldn't have an easy mode because it takes away from it. It's like, first of all, like, you're an idiot. But, like, also, like, sorry, I'm not going to, like, mince my words. I think it's, like, just an objectively stupid thing to say. But I think, like, you know, you directly benefit from other people being able to play the way that they want, right? Because, like, I'm never going to buy a Dark Souls or an Elden Ring or a Bloodborne or whatever, right? Because I don't have the physical capability to finish those games. But, like, if there was an option that made them easier and made it actually completable for me, I would buy that. I would give money to your favorite developer so that they can make more things and hire more staff and get games out quicker and make higher quality games, right? And there's, like, millions of other people like me that, like, just wouldn't buy these games because, you know, they're too difficult or whatever. And, you know, this could be more money that is given to your developer, your favorite developer, and you don't have to touch those easy difficulties. If you want to, like, you know, scroll into the menu and like pick the one that's like, you know, nail my balls to the wall. Like, pick it, right? Nobody's going to stop you. It's not going to like affect anybody else. Just, you know, think about like how much better things could be if more people played the games that you like playing. You could talk to a friend who's like maybe a little more of a casual gamer at work about Elden Ring, and you know, they probably struggled just as much as you did, but the difficulty is a little different. So yeah.
That's where the discussion sort of gets a little pricklier, I feel, because like I personally like a lot of From Software games. I rarely finish them, but I really enjoy playing them, and like the difficulty, sure, like they have this reputation of being hard, but like the difficulty, I think, for a lot of people is that they go into them thinking that you've just got to be like Neo in the Matrix and you just have to basically just see like everything as like reflexes and frame rates and things, or like, you know, animation frames. You've got to get in at this certain time and things. But what a lot of people need to sort of realize as well is that these games are pretty, like, they're hardcore RPGs in their core. And like a lot of the times, like if you build your focus on building your character and learning more about the game, like you'll find other ways to take down some of these heavy, harder bosses. And there are a lot of games that are like that as well. Like, sure, back in the day, it was a problem with like having to grind for a lot of these things to level up your character or find the best items or have enough money to buy the best items and all these kinds of things. But generally, like, you know, a lot of games now, like something like Elden Ring, for example, it's so much more open. The approach to the overall scope and design of that game is very different to other Souls-like games, because, you know, it's not as linear and you can go anywhere, which means you can potentially find a lot of these things that help boost your character and find other enemies that you can probably take down, which then contribute to how good of a character build you have to take down other harder enemies and stuff. So I totally understand that, like, these games are difficult for some people, whether that's, you know, just like their physical capabilities to be able to play them, or even just like, you know, the technical capability of just, or even I forget, I'll lose the word, but just the tolerance for playing something is difficult. I think it's difficult to say that like every video game should be for every person, therefore it should fit this specific mold for everyone to be able to play it. I think for generally, like, art is different for different people. Like, you know, movies challenge people in different ways in terms of like how they respond to them. Like, you know, not every movie needs to be approachable for every person. Same with music, same with, you know, sculptures and paintings and things like that. I think video games are also the same thing. I think it's unfortunate though that difficulty is sort of the crux of that, the approachability as to whether or not someone can come in to enjoy a game, particularly newcomers or people with physical disabilities and things like that as well. It's a difficult sort of conversation to sort of veer into when we start looking at that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you just have to frame it in like, you have to look at games in like a different light as part of like an art form, right? Like, so gameplay mechanics and the way a game works and the difficulty of that game is a core part of how games as a whole work, right? So if you were thinking about like a movie or a TV show and you wanted to make it more accessible to people, and people were saying TV shows shouldn't have subtitles, TV shows shouldn't have any type of audio descriptions, that audio description track tied to them, TV shows or movies shouldn't have a version where there are reduced flashes for people who are sensitive to that type of stuff, I don't think a lot of people would agree with that in any way. And I think we're sort of crossing into that barrier right now with games, where like the difficulty of a game, if we just want to talk about it like that, is sort of in that same area where like there should just be, like I said, I don't want to use the word concession because I feel like it's minimalizing how people develop games or what the people who try to play them go through.
I think compromise might be a better word for it. Like sort of like a meeting in the middle kind of.
Yeah, thing. It should be like let's go with that. That we're meeting in the middle for people who, especially people who don't have a choice, right? People who have like a physical or cognitive impairment where they can't physically or mentally cannot do something, there's no reason, I think anyway, that they shouldn't be able to enjoy this piece of art just like anyone else. And I feel like that goes should go for the majority of art, if not all art. Like,
and let's be honest too, just if a developer made Dark Souls 4 and they made it and they put in every customizable function that we have in the industry so far today, there will still be people that are unable to play that game. Like, yeah, there will be some restrictions that just don't come into play. But I think coming back to the point where, you know, game difficulty is, it just needs to be able to provide you with enough of a challenge to make your progress through the game feel like you're achieving something, that you're getting rewards for the effort you're putting in. And if that means that, you know, you have to turn on subtitles, which, let's be honest, subtitles weren't around for so many years. And now I've seen some people complain about accessibility options, but then they go and turn subtitles on. It's like,
dude, subtitles in video games are an absolute must for me. I cannot play games without subtitles these days.
Because I would say the majority of people would agree with you. The majority of people that I know turn on subtitles immediately. The
first things that I do when I start up a game, I do four things. I check to see if there's an achievement for difficulties. I turn on subtitles. I change the inversion for Y-axis. I bring the music levels down in all games, because apparently no one who works in video games knows how to mix a damn video game so I can actually hear the audio. Hear the dialogue. It's so frustrating.
So I went into Star Wars Jedi Survivor and I didn't turn on subtitles because I'm like, that's fine, it's Star Wars, right? And then it's like, oh, Senator Brush and Nahu on planet. I'm like, oh God, now I have to turn subtitles on just so I know what the hell these names are.
That's generally why I have
subtitles on, is just for names. Just so people are spelling things. So,
But I think when we talked about the comparison to, like, you know, books or TV shows or movies, right? The key difference there is that, like, let's say that there's, like, you know, if you're an able person in, you know, who speaks English, right? You can sit down and watch a movie, and there is nothing that will stop you from seeing that movie from start to finish, right? If you read a book, as long as you can understand English, there is nothing that will stop you from going from start to finish. And the same with a TV show. But, like, anybody can pick up a controller, but there will be things in some games that, like, will prevent you from seeing all of the content that has to offer. And I think that, like, that's where, like, we sort of have to draw the line with these things, is because, like, you know, we can't consider games the same as, like, movies and TV shows and books, because there's an interactivity, right? Like, you're not a passive bystander to the media being displayed. You are actively involved in it. And I think that changes the conversation, especially, you know, again, I don't want to get too into accessibility, but, like, you know, for people that do have disabilities, you know, it's kind of crucial that we start designing games that are, you know, not necessarily, you know, for everyone, but for anyone, rather.
Yeah, I think the point that I was very poorly trying to make was that all forms of art, depending on who you are, get to be experienced by you in a different way. Like, you don't always intend someone to experience something the same way as you envisioned they would. So, you know, you might have a painting and there might be someone who is visually impaired who can't see that painting, but they can feel the impasto in the paint on your painting, right? And you would have never envisioned someone to experience your painting like that, but that could be the way that they experience it. And I think games need to have that same effect. You can build a game, like I said from the beginning, with an intended way to play, but we should be building in ways where people can play the game in a way that you might not intend them to play it because they don't have another choice. It's as simple as that.
You're exactly right, Michael. We should definitely apply Death of the Author to all forms of art. I mean, that's essentially what the discussion is, right? When we come to, like, developer intent, right? Is that, like, it's how people engage with games, right? And, like, I don't think the way that the developer intends for people to engage with games is any more or less important than the way that the player wants to engage with games.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, if you want to glitch in a bunch of diamonds in Tears of the Kingdom, you know, why stop that, right? If you want to, you know, go into the INI files and give yourself, like, you know, unlimited health in Dark Souls, like, that might not be the intended way to play it, but, like, it's no less valid the way that the person has chosen to engage with the game.
You want to go into Doom and access the command console, turn on God mode, and just lay waste to hordes without worrying about taking a single bullet hit?
Yeah. And I think, like, the frustrating thing is that, like, so many of things, these, like, options that people are asking for and that would make things easier for some people, stuff that, like, are included in debug menus that the devs use every day. All they need is a front-end toggle for it, and, you know, it makes
less mods.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not an easy conversation. Like, there's a lot of
factors
to take into it, and it's a lot harder to make the argument that difficulty should be retroactively added into games or whatever, because, you know, it's not always that easy. But I think that you can always design a game from the ground up to be more accessible to more people and more approachable to more people. And I think if you're a developer and you're not doing that, I think you're kind of, like, you know, limiting your audience needlessly. Because I think more people, like, people want to play games. You know, I want to play Dark Souls because it's, like, you know, dark gothic fantasy. It's basically fucking 3D Castlevania, and I love the shit out of Castlevania. But, you know, I just don't have the physical ability to do it, so I don't buy those games, which...
I don't buy those games because I think they're poorly designed, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, so, I don't know, maybe we'll come back to that in a later episode, but at the moment I think we should move on and talk about the games that we're playing. Angela, you've got an interesting one there as your first game you're playing.
Yeah, Cassette Beast just recently came to Game Pass, in the last couple of weeks or something like that, and I recently got my hands on a Steam Deck, which I've been really, really happy and frustrated tootling away with, trying to get it to work the way I want it to. You know, trying to get things like Game Pass working on it is a bit fiddly, but when it works, which is great. And that's how I've been playing Cadet Beasts, actually, is via Game Pass. And yeah, I'm actually really, really enjoying it so far. It's very much a Pokemon clone, but with a kind of an interesting twist in that instead of, like, capturing things by, you know, throwing balls at them, you sort of copy them by using a Walkman that has a record feature, and you use cassette tapes. You sort of record them using that. And
your sound wave.
Yeah, basically. So yeah, it's still very, very early. I'm not really very far in it at all. But, you know, there's like 120 creatures to sort of, like, scan and discover and copy and all those kinds of things. Story is a little bit weird though. Like, I don't quite understand what's going on. Again, I'm very early in the game. The way I sort of understand it is that you're basically, like, dead. You're, like, in purgatory or limbo or something like that, and everyone else is also there across different times, and no one knows how they got there, and people sort of talk to you as if, you know, I don't know what kind of era you're from, as to whether or not you even have, like, movies or TV and things from where you're from. And it's such a bizarre sort of idea, and, like, there are these giant beasts called, like, archangels. So it almost gets, like, sort of Neon Genesis and philosophical in that sort of way. It's very, very odd in terms of what the story is.
Does the game have to explain to you what a cassette and a Walkman is? Because I've got a feeling that it's going to be a large subset of people that don't know what either of those two things are.
Well, so, you mean that TikTok video with that girl with the cassette tapes?
Yeah, yeah. No, it doesn't quite do that. Although, like, you know, there is... I won't get too much into the story because I'm still sort of working things out. I don't want to say the wrong thing. But, like, you know, it does have sort of that, like, retro cool kind of tone to it, where, like, you know, it's cool that you're using cassette tapes and all that, you know? And, like, to rewind the tapes, like, you have to use a pencil and all these kinds of, like, silly little tropes. But I think the idea is kind of interesting. I'm liking the art style. It's kind of that mix of voxel graphics with kind of, like, 2D pixel art characters over the top of it. Yeah, it's super colorful. The music's interesting as well. There's some music with actual spoken lyrics in them, which is interesting too. But yeah, I'm kind of down with it. And the other game that I'm playing is Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which is, you know, another Star Wars Jedi game. Super cool. Way bigger than I thought it was going to be. I'm just, like, up to the open world planet, and I'm already like, oh my god, this is such a huge game. It's going to take me forever to get through it. So I think there's going to be that kind of slow burn game that I play, you know, for a couple of hours at a time.
So a video the other day, somebody claimed they got through that game in 32 minutes or 36 minutes. It's like, you can't even get through the tutorial in that amount of time.
Yeah.
So obviously they found some way to skip that.
Yeah, it's pretty bonkers. But it's looking incredible. And I think this is going to be the first game that I play through on this generation of consoles in 30 FPS performance resolution mode. Because I'm actually kind of liking it. I kind of like the way it looks when I put it into performance mode at 60 FPS. Like, the fact that it's at 1440p is actually really jarring to me. I'm looking at it, I'm like, this just looks kind of off.
We're playing it in 4K. I don't know if I can continue recording this podcast with
I know,
you,
it's,
quite frankly.
It's, and look, I'm look, not going to lie. I was absolutely the same. I had the same attitude as well. Like, when I went into it, I'm like, nah, 60 FPS or bust. Playing this game, like, it defaults to resolution mode. And I'm like, I kind of prefer this. I don't like the way it looks or feels in 60 FPS.
I played it through in quality mode because I just the amount of visual flourishes just look nicer for me.
Yeah, for
whatever it's worth, the 60 FPS mode is not 60 FPS. Like, it does not consistently hit 60 FPS. So, I think, like, going for 30 FPS and having a consistent frame rate over, like, a higher but very inconsistent frame rate is
definitely
the way to go. Especially because it looks so much nicer too. Because in the quality mode, it has like a very dynamic resolution that, like, drops down like as far as 900p, which is just real ugly sometimes on a big 4K display.
So glad we got all this power, you know, that we still can't hit 1080p on half the games we play. I also want to say my TV is also like 9 years old, so it looks like ass when I play in like performance mode. It just can't keep up. My new TV gets delivered this week. So
I think specifically for Jedi Survivor, they need an option on console to turn off ray tracing. That would very drastically improve performance.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it, like, I genuinely think ray tracing is like the 3D of this generation of consoles. Nobody cares, right?
Oh, it's
like,
that's fair. I was going to say, I thought you were going to say that ray tracing is like bad and awful. But yeah, no, I agree that, like, this generation is 100% that. Totally.
Yeah, like, it's just like, it's not really worth like the performance hit, right? Like, it looks a little bit prettier, right? But, like, you know, nobody was complaining about like baked in reflections or like, you know, standard dynamic lighting. Nobody was complaining. Nobody was like, oh, wow, this game is great, except, you know, it doesn't have ray traced reflections. Like, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, the trade-off. I was just going to quickly say, like, the trade-off of like 10% better lighting for like 50% frame rate is not worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah. And like, there's an argument to be made that it makes like lighting easier for developers, and that's absolutely true, right? Like, not having to bake in lighting for every single scene and every single like possible interaction is like a huge boon for developers, but like, they have to do that anyway for like the PC version of the game if it's a multi-platform game, because you can just turn ray tracing off. So it's like, well, if you're already doing the work, like, this is just like, put that into the consoles as well, because right now we're having like huge performance issues in all of these games. You know, PC games are like broken at launch because they're trying to like optimize all these different things, and they just can't because they have to put ray tracing in as well, and people get angry if there's not ray tracing. It's just,
I remember Devil May Cry 5 on PlayStation 5, like 2 or 3 days after the console released, and I reviewed that version, and they had as a separate option, like, there was like performance mode, quality mode, and quality mode with ray tracing. I'm like, why wouldn't you just put ray tracing in quality mode? And then I turned on quality mode, and then I had quality mode with ray tracing on. I'm like, aha, that's why you don't bake it into the default setting. So
yeah. I think I said this when the new console gen came out, that I truly think, like, any like PS5 Pro or like Xbox Series X 2, whatever the hell they're gonna call it, comes out, the thing is gonna be like considerable performance increase in ray tracing, because we just aren't there yet. Once ray tracing becomes like an actual like performant level like thing, and you can do it without destroying a game, I think it's gonna be a pretty cool like leap in visuals for people.
All right, Luke, tell us about the games that you've been playing.
Yes, I've been playing this small little title called Tears of the Kingdom. Still playing through that. I did try to start playing the Horizon DLC. That has not gone well. But I also got to play F1 23. So I got to play through a good couple of chapters from the story mode. And it has one of the things that I absolutely despise in games, when the game forces you to lose for the sake of story.
When the battle lose the cutscene, it's always
It's like I was in they're like, oh, you got to win the race or we've got to finish the race. And I'm like in first place in the first chapter, and then the car has problems, so I have to retire. And I'm like, I just did like 9 laps, no issues. But now that I'm in first place, now that I've achieved the goal, now there's a problem. So that's fine. Again, it's just more F1. If you like last year's F1, you'll probably like this year's F1. I'm not an F1. I mean, I've been playing it since Nigel Mansell on the Super Nintendo way back in the day there. Yes, I'm old, people. But other than that, it's just more F1. It's a yearly sports release. There's not much more you can say about that sort of stuff, but I enjoyed my time with it. So,
Michael, what have you been playing?
I've been playing some Diablo 4 Crackablo. It is very good. If you enjoyed Diablo, any previous Diablo, you'll enjoy this. If you played it on PC, there's a lot of clicking. If you played it on console, there's a lot of, I don't know what buttons you press. Is it triggers for the main attack or is it buttons? I've got no idea.
You just hold it. It's usually the face buttons.
I believe it's A.
Just hold it. There's a lot of A it. Pressing then.
I just laugh every time I see a new mouse come out. You know, they're like, this is a gamer mouse. It's registered for 50,000 clicks. And I'm like, oh, so like 2 sessions of Diablo.
Yeah. Or Dota.
I was saying before the podcast, I started playing it yesterday, and I started playing at 11:30 a.m. And then all of a sudden it was 6 p.m. And that's a session of Diablo for you. Time just disappears and your brain switches off and you become one with the world, and it is glorious. So if you enjoy it, live the dream.
And I have to call out, this is from the same person that last podcast.
Here we go.
ragged on the developer because they made a really shit game, but the same developer, a different team, but the same publisher. You know, when they actually know how to do, when they get things right, they get things very right. So,
yeah, I stand by my choices on shitting on everyone equally.
Yeah, so I have also been playing Diablo 4. I played it for review, so I've been playing the past 2-ish weeks. I don't even know. Time is not a thing that exists when Diablo is involved. You just, like, I don't know. I've played through all of the game, well, all of the story content. There's a bunch of post-game content as well, but that's another thing altogether. And yeah, it is so addictive. Michael, what class are you playing out of curiosity?
I'm playing Sorcerer.
Nice. So I played as Druid. Loved it so much because you can basically play it as a sorcerer. And that's like just my favorite thing is when you can just, you know, pick a class that's like, oh yeah, we definitely want you to like transform into a werewolf. And it's like, cool, but you're giving me lightning powers. So here we are. But yeah, it's very, very fun. My main major complaints are that, you know, as I was saying a little bit before the podcast, you know, there's a lot of story stuff that is just like straight up recycled from previous games, and if you spent like thousands of hours playing those games like I have, you'll start to notice that there's not a lot of like original storytelling in there, which, you know, it's fine, it's whatever. I think the monetization and battle pass and platinum your money and making you pay $15 for a single horse on the shop, like that stuff is just complete nonsense.
It just reminded me, for the love of God, whoever designed this, go to hell. Put your stash chest next to a blacksmith. Why would you design it
like on the opposite far away side of the city? Oh God. It's just, and there's like so many like quality of life stuff in Diablo 4 that wasn't in previous games, where like you can mark stuff as junk if you just don't want it anymore. So when you go to the blacksmith, you can just sell it all at once. And like that's great. And then it's like, okay, but like previously, if I went to the blacksmith, the chest would just be like, you know, a couple steps away. And now it's like in most, like, I've been to every single like city in this game, and there's like 5 or 6 different like big cities. And like in 2 of them, I don't even know where the stash chest is, right? Like it's somewhere in the town, but it's not near anything I go to, so yeah, it's a yeah, there's issues with it, but like the gameplay loop is like pure Diablo, and it's like the best parts of every other Diablo game. So it's like got the punchiness of like Diablo 2 and like the feeling of power that Diablo 3 has, and it's just, it's all just so much fun. But yeah, I'm gonna Unfortunately for reviewers, we lost our characters when the game went live, so my like level 50 plus some druid is no longer for this world, which is a bummer.
I know people like give reviewers, oh, but you got a free game. It's like, yeah, but when something like this happens, when you spend like 2 weeks playing a game and it's on a server that won't exist once the review period's gone, it's like all that work, all that effort, and you don't get to continue it. It's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah,
I hate when people say that reviewers get a free game. That really drives my gears. Because you get a game that's worth like $70, but then you do like 20 hours of work playing the game, and then you do about 3 or 4 hours of work baseline, like just reviewing it. So all up, you're at least doing 25 hours of work, which is not worth $70.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Is it like
completely different discussions, but that's always going
to be a lot of like freelance reviewers as well. Like they get paid like, you know, $150 for a review, but they put like, you know, 60 hours into the game and then like 10 hours into writing and editing the review, and it's like, well, you've just like been paid essentially like $8 an hour. Which,
yeah, I've written for sites like as a volunteer for much of my writing career, if you'd call it that. And like a lot of the times the editors would always treat like getting games to review as a reward, and I'm like, buddy, I'm giving you content. This is not this is not a reward. I'm working for you, giving you content. Anyway, like, we'll set that aside as another topic for discussion.
We will. Yeah.
We've reached our tangent limit this episode.
But yeah, I've also been playing Tears of the Kingdom. I have done 4 temples so far, enjoying the heck out of it. I'm really liking just one of the things that I didn't really see called out too much in reviews or in previous discussion. The way that like the gameplay experience snowballs for the player. So basically, like, you know, it took me a week to like feel confident enough to take on the first temple, and then it took me like 4 or 5 days to get to the second temple. And now, like, I just knocked out 2 temples in 1 day, like, literally earlier today before we started this, because I feel so much more confident and I'm, like, more capable of playing the game, that, like, you know, the experience points are the player, right? It's, like, my knowledge and my experience are what makes me stronger in Tears of the Kingdom, and that's, like, really, really good game design, but all of this game is incredible game design, So yeah, I hated the heck out of Breath of the Wild, but Tears of the Kingdom is really, really clicking with me so, so much.
Guess I'll never know.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's the game we're playing. I don't think I've missed anyone, have I?
No.
Cool. So 20 questions.
Let's see how we go with this one then. All right, gentlemen, how about it?
Is this a game? Jokes. No. Do this game.
Can you imagine, yeah, I was gonna say, can you imagine if you said no?
Did this game release on or after 2010?
It did not.
Was this game developed for a handheld platform?
No.
Okay. Was this released on a on or before January 1st, 2000?
Okay, the hard answer is no.
Okay.
So, it was after that?
That's between...
Does Angela know how to tell the dates?
Between...
Wait, so January... did you say on or before?
Yes,
yeah, on or before January 1st.
Oh, sorry. Yes. 2000.
Okay, so it's
right, before, so it's before 2000. Okay, cool. Can you imagine if you didn't realize that? I'll correct it. You would have been pigeonholed so hard. I don't want to narrow down.
I think we need to narrow down a console.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. It's not a handheld, so... was this game released on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System?
TM? No, it was not.
Okay.
I think that's four. Four questions.
It is.
Four.
I think it was, yeah.
Was this game... does this game feature 3D graphics?
I was going to quickly look up a screenshot.
That's always a good sign.
I believe it does. Yes, it does. Yes.
Okay.
So, so it has to be 64 unless there's like some really spectacular NES game that I've never heard of, it's Nintendo 64.
Okay.
Was this game published by Nintendo?
Yes, it was.
Interesting. Okay. Did this game use the expansion pack?
Yes.
Glad you're confident with your answer there, Angela. That it helps.
No, sorry. It did not.
It didn't use it. Okay, cool. All right. Oh, I would have narrowed it down so much. That sucks.
No, because in terms of dates anyways, the expansion pack came out in 2000, right?
Huh?
Did it?
Perfect Dark, Donkey Kong.
I
got mine with Donkey Kong 64.
Yeah.
Because I came back from the States in September of 2000 and I got Perfect Dark, but I didn't have the expansion pack. So yeah, I'm looking it up.
I remember the expansion pack was a must for Perfect Dark.
It came out in 1998. I feel vindicated.
Okay, my bad. Anyway, no, it did not require the expansion pack.
Not required, did it just use it? Like, did it support it?
I can't answer that, I have no idea then.
Okay. Because
there were a few games that used it but didn't require it, so...
Correct, yeah. That's what I was asking.
Did we say this was, like, published by Nintendo, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm all over the place now. Is that six?
It's either six or seven, one of the two.
Seven.
Yeah. Seven, yeah.
Well, we'll say six because that one that Michael asked was a freebie. I couldn't answer that
one. Okay. I'll allow it.
I mean, video viewers will see the hearts on the side of the screen. So that helps.
All right. You can make sure like one appears for seven and then gets taken away.
I'm keeping my fingers up this time.
Was this game developed in Japan?
Yes.
Okay.
Have we already had Mischief Makers? Because that's like the first thing that's coming into my brain.
We have had Mischief Makers.
Okay. That wasn't a question, so don't take a point away, Luke.
No, but yeah, we have had that. I was very happy.
Okay. So, Nintendo published, made in Japan.
Nintendo published a surprising amount of shit on the N64. I just want to put that out there. Like, they didn't develop any more than any other console, but they published so much.
The only thing is I said to save a 3D graphics and he had to check it. So to me, it seems it's not a 3D game.
Full disclosure, I haven't played this game.
Okay.
I'm also like thinking of like Ogre Battle, which is a fun little tactics game.
Yeah, I mean, we could ask narrow down the Nintendo characters, like Mario and all that. Because that'll knock out
narrow down our genre. Sorry.
Yeah, too.
Yeah, I mean, either of those. Take your pick.
Is this game considered an adventure game?
I don't believe so, no.
Is this a racing game?
No, it's not.
Okay, this is a complex question. Is this game known for being a cross-media franchise? As in, it has games and, you know, animated shows or movies or something like that?
I don't believe so, no. That's 10.
Okay.
Because
that knocks out things like Star Wars and... like Pokemon and...
Nintendo developed a Star Wars game, but sure.
They published Star Wars. All of the Star Wars games on N64 were published by Nintendo.
Yeah, but they weren't developed in Japan.
Yeah, I was about to ask. Did you ask if they were developed in Japan?
I asked that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fair, but even still. Pokemon was still very much on the table, and I wanted to get that out.
True. I mean, Is this game considered a puzzle game?
No.
Is this an RPG?
No.
Jesus. We could ask the meta question.
But if we've mentioned it.
No, no, no. Is it on Nintendo? Is it on the Nintendo 64 app?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. No. Give it a go.
Is this game available on the Nintendo Switch Online Nintendo 64 app?
It is not.
Okay.
This is a tough one.
I can't think of it. I can't think of anything.
Not be tough though, and it's like, oh yeah, fucking Mario Tennis or whatever. Like. Majora's Mask. Just the super basic.
I was thinking about Sin and Punishment, but I don't think that was released before 2000.
No, that was pretty late N64 from memory. But did Nintendo publish that, or did Treasure publish it themselves?
I think Nintendo published it. I could be wrong, though.
I remember Nintendo published the Wii Shop release of it. It's part of the Virtual Console, but I don't know if they did the original release.
I mean, this isn't getting us closer to it, so...
No.
13 questions down.
I mean, has this game been on any other platforms, either concurrently or since? Like,
it has.
Okay. So it's either a multi-plat, unlikely, or it has been on, like, Virtual Console.
Or Nintendo published the game initially and now it's in one of those collections.
Also possible. Or, like, it's a rare thing. Well, probably not rare because they're not, you know, not Japanese, but...
Bomberman 64 come out. Wasn't that published by Nintendo?
Pretty sure that was Hudson.
There's like so many of these things where it's like... It seems like it should be Nintendo published because it's only ever been on Nintendo stuff and like they have a close working relationship. Like all of the Hudson stuff.
Yeah.
Were like, they pretty much only made Nintendo games, but... Yeah.
Would you classify that as a... Did you ask about puzzle games? Would you classify Bomberman as a puzzle game? I don't even know what you classify that as.
64.
Yeah.
I'd say that's an adventure game.
Okay, fair.
I love that game so much.
Also, which I already asked if it was an adventure game, and he said,
"Yeah."
So it's not an RPG. It's not a puzzle game. It's not an adventure game. You asked about racing, didn't you, Michael?
Yeah, it's not a racing game.
If this is Mario Tennis, I'm going to lose my shit.
Have you asked about puzzle games? You haven't, have we?
We have it. It's not a puzzle game.
Oh, it's not a puzzle game. Sorry, just had a literally just forgot over that, Michael. Yeah, no.
Is this considered a sports game?
No, it's not. That's 15.
God, what I'm going to say. Hell?
I don't think genre is going to help you with this one.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it. I was going to say it could be Odma, but that was GameCube.
Man.
What about Mario Parties? Because there's Mario Party 2 and 3 which aren't on the Switch app yet. Because they're still coming. They're not adventure games. They're not puzzle games. They're not races.
I think it could only be Mario Party 2 in that case. Because Mario Party 3 was like 2000 or 2001 or something.
I mean, we could ask if rolling a dice is important in this game.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. You could ask that. I don't really have any other leads, so.
I don't. Sorry, yeah.
I was going to say, does this game feature Mario or his direct conglomerate of characters? So, Luigi, Donkey Kong, Peach, Bowser.
No, it does not.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so I'm thinking like...
Does this game have multiplayer?
Ooh, good question. I can't answer that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So you're still on 16. That was a freebie.
Two freebies for me. Winning the game.
just to like
hacks.
Get this out of the way. I don't know. We don't really have any other options. Did this game release outside of Japan? Its original form?
I'm going to go ahead and say I think so.
Okay.
I mean, my mind's gone to Doshin the Giant.
See, I was thinking of Captain Robo.
Custom Robo, yeah.
Okay, we're, that's 17, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to ask it now because I feel like we're late in the game. Have we mentioned this game yet?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, God. That makes it so much worse. Why did I do that to myself?
Because the only games that still fit in it would be Ogre Battle, 64.
No, because Ogre Battle's like a strategy RPG. So I feel like it not being an RPG means Ogre Battle can't really be it.
Okay.
I didn't ask about RPGs.
Yeah, you did.
Did you ask about adventure games and puzzle games and racing games? Ollie asked about...
Michael asked about puzzle. Michael asked about racing. I did puzzle and adventure. Ollie did RPG.
Okay, my mistake. There's a lot of genres getting thrown around.
Yeah. And the whole when you hint at a genre may not help us. To me, that means it's not just you look at it and you go, cool, that's like a platformer game. Which Chibi Robo or Custom whatever the hell
Custom it's called, Robo, that, yeah.
That's definitely like a platformer-esque type game.
Yeah, it's like a weird action-y thing.
What was that first game you mentioned? Mischief Makers? Could it be that? Well, I don't know what game
we've
is.
We've already had it.
I've already had it.
I don't know unless Angelo's doing a thing there. Have we even like outright confirmed that it's on the Nintendo 64?
We haven't, but it said it's got 3D graphics and it's not Super Nintendo. So, and it came out before 2000.
I mean, maybe there's like some hidden gem on the NES that has 3D graphics.
That's what I said before. I said some really rare.
I mean, I'm happy to burn a question to confirm.
Well, we don't know. We have to have a guess.
I think it's worse. I have likely. A guess.
If it's not on 64, this is going to be incredible.
There was a Captain Rainbow game on 64, wasn't there?
Captain Rainbow was like for sure only a Wii thing, right? I just can't think of anything else that was like made in Japan. Like, that's just nothing.
I mean, is there any question that we can confirm that it's Custom Robo?
I don't know enough about it. I mean, just Animal Crossing? Like, is that something we could do? Because, like, that was on...
We never mentioned it.
Yeah.
We didn't mention it. Oh, Jesus.
Because I was gonna ask hints about that, and then Michael asked the meta question.
It's going to be, like, the stupidest thing. We're going to feel so dumb. It's going to be like a super common game. Okay. That
Custom knows. Robo has robots in it, right? Like that's in the title. It's got to have robots in it.
Surely. Right. What if there's something else, though? Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, we don't really have any
I'll take it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, does this game have robots in it?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
I know we're not supposed to cheat, but that game didn't release outside of
Japan. I think that's 18.
That was 19.
18 or 19? I think it was 19, right?
Yeah, we have to guess now. We have no questions left.
Yeah, because I asked if we had 17, then I asked the meta question, so that'll be 18.
You're right, yes, we're at 19.
Yeah.
What's a guess?
Jesus.
Oh, I've got no idea. It's going to be something super obvious, like, and I can't think. Oh, it's not on 64, and we've just completely, and the smirk on Angelo's face is making me doubt my life choices up until this point. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, I just have nothing, you know? It's not a sports game, so it's probably not Mario Tennis.
I'm going to guess Sin and Punishment, but I don't think it came out before 2000.
What if it's, like, one of those weird, like, licensed, like, not licensed, but, like, one of those weird ones that got, like, ported and then, like, published by Nintendo? Because it's, like, weird stuff, like, I don't know. I don't know, I'm thinking, like, were there anything like, you know, how SimCity had a Super Nintendo port?
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Was there anything like that on the Nintendo 64?
I mean, there is SimCity on the Nintendo 64, but it was only for the DD.
We haven't rolled out the DD, as far as I'm aware.
We haven't.
I think, like, there was a Command & Conquer.
Yeah, that was Westwood Studios.
But we hadn't mentioned that previously, so... Yeah, can't be that.
Westwood Studios are in California.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows, right?
Look, we mentioned it, so what games have we mentioned? I can't even think of anything but the one I mentioned, so...
Custom Robo. Mario Tennis.
One of the Mario Parties.
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe we can just go with
that. I asked if it had the Mario characters in it, and it does not.
Oh, that's right. Of course.
Star Wars.
Did we mention a Star Wars game, or just, like, a specific game? I just said
Star Wars.
Yeah. I don't know. We have to guess. Like, this has gone on too long. I've got no idea.
Maybe, maybe we're just wrong, right? And Custom Robo doesn't have any robots in it, right? Like, maybe that's what it is.
It's gotta have robots in it. That's insane.
I mean, I don't know anything else. So, like, I don't know. Just pick a random N64 game, like, I guess. Like, I got nothing. Absolutely nothing. Like, I don't know, Excitebike.
Or... Okay. I don't think it's Sin and Punishment. Like I said, I'm pretty sure that came out after 2000. So if for some reason Custom Robo doesn't have robots in it, I'm willing to guess Custom Robo. I'm going to do it. All right. Is this game Custom Robo?
Okay.
Gonna hit us. So,
let's just knock my microphone in excitement. Released in Japan on December 1st, 1999, and receiving an expansion.
That's right on the edge. Sorry.
That's right. And received an expansion in May 2000, and then getting a re-release on the GameCube in Japan in March 2002, and then in Europe, September 2002. Developed by Nintendo, the god game, Doshin the Giant.
Oh my god.
On the N64 DD.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. And it was a DD game.
Send good vibes to Darren in the Vooks Discord for that.
Okay, that's good. That was a good one. You know what?
A loss.
I'm angry and I'm bursting with rage, but I'll allow it. Yeah,
no one confirmed that it was N64. Luke mentioned it literally right before Michael asked if we've mentioned this game. Luke literally goes, "Oh, it's probably Doshin the Giant," and then Michael goes, "Have we mentioned this game?" And I'm like, "Yes."
I got stuck on Captain Rainbow.
I don't think I even heard him say that.
No, I remember saying it because it was that one, and then in the GameCube preview stuff. There was a game that was like very, very similar to it, and it never released. And it looked cool, and I remember it, and I remember thinking, "Man, that looks like Doshin the Giant." So that game sort of sits in my head because of this other game that never released.
I will say, yeah, I just looked it up on Wikipedia, and it says genre game, which is like nothing we ever would have been able to guess.
That's why, after like four or five guesses, I'm like, all right, genre's not going to help you here, unfortunately. I should have said that like earlier on, but didn't want to intervene too much, but yeah. The only thing that I know this game from is literally, I believe, one of the trophies in Melee that you get. Like, I remember seeing like the Doshin character as a trophy that you collect.
It's basically a yellow Gumby.
Yeah, kind of. And screenshots look absolutely wild.
Came out. I didn't say that. I just looked up Custom Robo, and it also came out in 1999, and also re-released on GameCube. And like, yeah. Oh man,
that was a tough one. I've been handing out a lot of easy ones apparently, because mine pretty much always get guessed. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take one.
Totally fair. 64 DD is definitely something that no one thinks about, and quite frankly, it'll always be on our mind for every 20 questions from now on.
It was the moment that, like, so the whole time I was hoping you guys wouldn't get it, and I'm very glad that you didn't, because I feel a little better about it. But the moment that Luke said Doshin the Giant, I'm like, okay, he's going to cling on to that one because it's super obscure. And I literally just answered the question that, yes, you have mentioned this game. And then it just never came up again. I'm like, okay.
I didn't even think I knew that it came out originally on 64 DD. Like, I didn't think either. That was even in my head.
There's only like four games I remember from the DD. Doshin the Giant, the SimCity game, the Mario Paint type sequel thing, stage, whatever it was called. And then there was the, you know, what was supposed to be the Zelda era thing.
Wasn't there also the F-Zero track editor thing?
Is that... Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have any memory of that.
You could share discs with people.
And the reason why I got tripped up about the expansion pack thing is because throughout the Wikipedia article, literally the word expansion shows up like four or five times. So in my head, I'm like, oh, yes, it is. And then I had to go back and I'm like, oh my God, no, it doesn't use the expansion pack. So I do apologize for that one.
Well, that about wraps up this week's Vootcast. Thanks, Darren, for tripping us up. Send us more suggestions.
Darren.
I think Luke is next.
Yes.
Yep, Luke is next. Sure. If you want to punish us even more. Luke always gives Scott hard ones anyway. So
I don't think anyone can punish us more than Luke can. So.
Look, I'm just happy that this one wasn't Mario Tennis, because if I'd said that and then it ended up being Mario Tennis, I would have just died.
And if it happened to be Custom Robo, that would have been the greatest comeback.
Yeah, because it's in the title, right? It could have maybe not been about robots. Anyway.
I'd only said Robo, not robots.
So well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Could have been like a mistranslation. Be sure to visit the site www.vooks.net for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter at vooks.net, which is all spelled out. Or jump on over to our Discord at bit.ly/vooksdiscord. You can find all of the host's social information and links for all the stories covered in this episode in the episode notes on whatever platform you're listening to. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next fortnight. What?